Blog Talk Radio. Thank you for joining Dr. Perletta Ramos and Roz Shell in Living Life Powerfully. We help you turn the ordinary into the extraordinary by claiming your power, getting your heart in the game, and learning how to live from the inside out. Let's create more happiness and success in your life.
Most of us have an idea about what we believe a good or correct relationship is supposed to be or look like. And we can be very sure of ourselves of how to get to that. Right? We may think we have the best or right way to do it. The reality is being in a relationship simply means being connected. And we're connected in many different ways all of the time, whether it be with our partners, our children, at work, with our environment, and obviously all of the time we're connected with ourselves. Today we welcome Colette Pfeiffer to the show to talk about relationships. Colette is one of those Renaissance women who is great at a number of things. She's a teacher, a writer, an artist, and a psychotherapist. So Colette, who currently lives in Boulder, works with individuals in her psychotherapy practice, and she works with couples to help them have healthy, thriving relationships. Thank you, Colette, for joining us and sharing your wisdom today on how to use relationships as a playground for learning, growth, and healing. How are you today?
I'm good. Thank you, Perletta. Good morning.
Hello. And how are you, Raj?
Good morning, Perletta. Good morning, Colette. I'm doing
Hello,
wonderful.
Raj.
How are you?
Good.
So what is this great work of relationships, Colette?
Well, that's a phrase that's used by one of my teachers. I would say it's when we move on from the honeymoon period. It's when we move on from the wonderful falling in love time, which is great, don't get me wrong, but it's not really designed to last our whole lifetimes, although we get...
Uh-oh, seems like we've lost Colette. I'm not sure what that's about.
Oh.
That's okay. She'll phone back in.
Yeah.
So I think she was talking about the great work of relationships. And I know you and I quite often, Raj, are in a conversation about how challenging relationships can be and how there is an opportunity to see them as something beyond fulfilling our immediate needs, right, our need to be connected, but for us to work on addressing something deeper within ourselves. And that's the,
yes.
I think when Colette comes back on, that's what she's going to say that the great work is.
Yeah, and I wanted to hear about that honeymoon period because I know even though it feels really good, you know, it's not designed to last. So I want to hear more about that because I think so many couples, when they're going through that stage, it's hard to talk to them.
Well, I think at the end of the day, it feels so good to be in that honeymoon phase. I know that's the falling in love period. And, you know, I think physically, physiologically, our brains release certain hormones. And so those hormones feel good. There's a euphoric sense of the connection with the other and establishing, you know, new bonds and, there's nothing wrong with that phase. It's just more that the idea that, it's, as Colette said before she dropped off, it's not intended to be there forever. It is to allow for the bonding to occur. And then this great work, there's an opportunity for that to occur, which means, you know, it is work on some level. And it doesn't have to be negative work or, you know, painful work. Quite oftentimes, though, we make it painful, though.
Mm-hmm.
Why do we do that, Raj?
Well, you know, for me, you know, it is painful when we do get out of that honeymoon phase, which we all do. And one of the things that, like, premarital counseling is probably one of the most challenging counseling to do because when people are in love, they're not interested in asking the deeper questions. They're not interested in looking at the at the bigger picture, you know, what's going to happen when they fall out of this phase. And so I think one of the important things to remember is that either you have to do the work before or after. So somewhere you're going to have to do it. I just love it when people come to premarital counseling, whether you go to your, you know, your priest, the pastor, whoever, or to a therapist. It is important to ask those deeper questions before you, you know, fall out of that honeymoon phase.
I love that you point that out, because most often people look at going to any type of counseling as you have to do it when there's a problem, as opposed to really doing it to maintain, you know, healthy relationships. And if we look at relationships really in the basic sense of the definition, is the desire to be connected. And sometimes we disconnect. And, you know, unless we've had these wonderful role models, and many of us haven't, but unless we have those, we've seen what healthy relationship and dialogue and working through conflict and building resilience in relationship looks like, you know, quite often we bring these dynamics that aren't helpful in our relationship, and it doesn't necessarily foster our being able to grow and mature in them with our partners or our family members or our work colleagues or whatever. So the idea of getting counseling in a proactive way is very not just helpful, but it can make all of the difference for our own sense of well-being.
Yeah, and I wonder how much that, you know, that beginning phase when you do fall out of that honeymoon phase, how much of that, if you start off on the wrong footing at that very delicate stage, how it impacts the whole relationship in the long run. You know, it can truly, you know, make or break the relationship. So that's why I would err towards, you know, doing something about it before rather than after. Yeah. So do you remember falling out of that phase, Perletta?
Oh, I remember thinking, what happened? Absolutely. And it's so funny because one of the key measures of that is, you, and people say this all the time, it's the thing that attracted you quite often is the thing that starts to agitate you or annoy you about your partner, you know, using that relationship as an example. And when that, I have been aware of when that has happened, when that thing that used to be so cute is now incredibly annoying. It's like, what happened?
Yeah, now you're down to reality here, right? It's like, whoa,
right.
Who is this person?
Yeah, and and actually that leads us to this conversation. I think Colette has joined us again, but it leads us back to this conversation of the work that is really meant to be done, if we look at it from that perspective in relationship, and that's to look at ourselves, you know, and our triggers and our own buttons. Because if we stay at the level of conversation where we're blaming, you know, another person for not making us happy, then we're not going to really progress and evolve as people. Colette, are you back with us now?
I am. Hello. Sorry about that. I'm not sure what happened.
No problem. So we were just continuing the conversation about what we thought you were going to say about the great work and what it feels like to fall out of the honeymoon phase.
Right. Yes, that is what I was going to say, that we get a lot of, you know, in the media, we have this expectation that we're going to be blissfully and madly in love with red roses appearing all over the place constantly. And that's not the reality. The lucky ones, you know, maybe get 2 years of a honeymoon period. And after that, the great work begins when we, you know, look at the person across the table and realize, wow, I seem to have married my father, or I seem to have married my mother. Which, you know, can feel like, oh my goodness, a big mistake, but actually it's not. It's my belief that that's what we're designed to do, because that gives us an opportunity to learn and grow and heal the past and heal the relationships that we had with those primary carers. And I think I heard you talking just then about, you know, it's not realistic to expect it all to be blissfully happy. And hopefully there are definitely moments of happiness and growth. But, you know, the other person is going to help us grow, and we're going to be intimate. We're going to have to be honest and take responsibility for our own side of that and our own learning and growing. And we're going to make a mess of it sometimes and have a lot of compassion for each other in this journey.
Or not.
That's what I was going to say.
I think one of the challenges is we oftentimes don't have compassion for one another when
right.
we're in a relationship. We go immediately
yes.
to blame because on some level there's an expectation that the other person is going to make us happy. And when they fail to do that, because they will, and we blame them. And when we do that, we're not looking at ourselves. And I say that from personal experience. That was the model that I had in my mind. As a matter of fact, my ex-husband used to tell me I read too many Harlequin romance novels because I expected, you know, things that he just wasn't willing and or able to do. And when the reality of that set in, you know, I, in my younger days, didn't look at what I was contributing. I was looking at what I wanted him to do for me. And that's where that blame comes in. So, Colette, how do you work with couples to stop blaming one another and focusing on that sense of what can I heal and learn from in the context of this relationship? And let me just add the second part of that, which is because there's such a high, you know, rate of divorce, if people don't end up in that conversation on some level, it can certainly lead to divorce because they blame the other person and they move on to the next one. So in this,
mm-hmm.
let me just restate it. How do you get couples to stop blaming one another to do the great work? And if they decide that the relationship isn't for them, you know, how do you help them transition and to also keep
right.
healing and their growth and development at the forefront?
Well, the first thing I would say is communication, and it's not news, but communication is like the most important thing. And when I work with couples, one of the first things I do, and it's not rocket science, but I get them to sit down and say, well, what are you looking for from this relationship? And often that is like really revealing to the other, because the other one didn't know that actually this person is looking for, I don't know, a companion, a friend, someone who will be with them, someone who will share their activities and their interests. That's often the man. And then the woman can have a very different expectation. They can want a confidant, someone they can share their deepest feelings with. So just getting two people to sit and listen. And it's quite amazing how many couples actually really struggle to make appointments. And that kind of reflects how important is this in your life? How are you prioritizing this relationship? Are you sitting down and spending some time just listening and talking to each other every day? And sometimes when they're really struggling to make an appointment, you know, and they've decided that they want to go to couples therapy, so the chances are that they're having a rough time. The appointment is really, it's an interesting process to watch because they can't find the time. They're not prioritizing it. And that usually tells me, well, this is a reflection that you're not doing that in your daily life either. So I would say the first thing is like really make time, sit down, talk to each other. You can practice a process called active listening where one of you doesn't speak. And you definitely don't want to be sitting there preparing your answer, preparing your defense if you're feeling attacked, but actually really saying to the other one, wow, I didn't know that, you know, when I leap out of bed in the morning and don't even say hello, that you feel like I haven't noticed you. That must feel awful. And just really trying to put yourself in the other person's shoes is very important. And we can forget to do that in the day-to-day busyness or, you know, take each other for granted. And in the process of that, Paletta, I've forgotten the other... Oh, I know. When people go their separate ways. Well, I mean, I think there are definitely ways of doing that without the shame and blame that divorce can instill in people, or just going your separate ways even if you've never been married. You know, and a big part of that is taking responsibility for what your part was in it. So it's the same journey. It's recognizing, well, you know, maybe when I'm angry with you because you're not available to me, I'm projecting my emotionally unavailable father onto you, and I'm not really seeing who you are. And when I'm in this, you know, place, I'm probably not very easy to talk to, for example. So taking responsibility of your side of it and being able to admit that, and I really recommend if couples have even decided to split up, that they still get someone to help them listen to each other, understand each other. Maybe they'll change their minds. Maybe they won't go their separate ways. But if they do, like you just said, Paletta, they'll go their separate ways with a really good understanding of what their role in that was and what they don't want to repeat next time, which is often a process of healing themselves before they rush into the next relationship with the same expectations and the same unresolved histories, I think.
And that's precisely what I think takes some time. You know, unless you have the skills up front, it's developing this sense of awareness that I have, A, that I even have expectations, B, that it is my responsibility to communicate, you know, not to go directly from how I feel to blaming someone else for not meeting the expectation of how I feel. And I love this idea of continuing or even starting therapy as you end a relationship. That's actually never occurred to me. but it can be particularly helpful, I think, when you have children. Not if you're going to continue the relationship, but quite often we stay until we get so fed up. You know, many people have no relationship with their partners, you know, after the relationship ends because they're just done. And so that idea of actually continuing or starting to see someone can be helpful in moving on to the next relationship. I love that idea, Colette.
I came across a thought the other day which makes really good sense, you know, and this idea of being disappointed with our partners. And it was talking about how we start off often when we meet, and I can relate this to my life. My husband is a keen rock climber, and we would go rock climbing. And I'm terrified of heights, but I just wanted to be with him. And this is what this piece of writing was saying, is like, to begin with, you'll find yourself doing all sorts of things that you never dreamt you'd do because you just want to get to know this person. And then when the relationship's moved on, you're seriously thinking, do I want to go rock climbing? You know, I'm with him all day. And things change. But it can feel like, oh boy, back in the old days, you loved me so much you went rock climbing and now you don't. And it's not that. It's just that the demands of the relationship have changed. And I think if you are willing, whether you do it with a therapist or you just do it on your own or as a couple, if you are willing to look at, well, you know, how come you don't go rock climbing with me anymore? And just be honest and not take it personally, because often it isn't personal. Often it's that person's changed, their needs have changed, their desire for intimacy is perhaps not not rock climbing, but something totally different. And if we can stay out of allowing that change, which is good, we're meant to grow, we're meant to change, if we can stay out of thinking, okay, he clearly doesn't like me anymore, or he doesn't like me as much as he used to, or whatever rabbit hole we choose to go down, it's going to help that conversation be honest and get somewhere useful so that we can find new ways of being intimate or hanging out, whatever that is.
Colette, what do you think about... Colette, I was just going to say, when we talk in terms of change, you know, that saying that, you know, there are problems in marriage because the woman, you know, changes and the man doesn't. What do you think about that?
Ooh, yes. I don't know whether I don't agree with it. I think, firstly, I think we are currently living at a time when the human race is changing very, very fast. And I think it used to be that women were more likely the ones to go off and buy a self-help book if the relationship was getting rocky. And honestly, I think we have to hold up our hands, sisters, and say we do sometimes, you know, get together with a man and even marry them and regard them as a project that we're going to change. I think that's a slight a female thing that we do tend to do, whereas men, and this is a huge generalization and people are going to complain bitterly, but men tend to be much more accepting
of themselves and of others, which is also a great benefit within relationships. But I think I actually, you know, when I work with couples, it's quite often the man that's picking up the phone and saying to me, you know, we need help, and that's different. That wasn't the pattern, I think, even 10 years ago. It was much more often the women saying, you know, we need to go to help, and the guy getting taken along by the hand. So I don't agree with it. It might be a slight pattern, but I don't think it's definitely all the way.
Mm-hmm. You've mentioned a number of different tools, you know, increasing communication, understanding expectations, active listening, developing compassion, taking responsibility, being honest, accepting change. All of those are things that you talked about, and we talked about them in the context of romantic, I'll say, relationships. What about other types of relationships? Do these same suggestions apply to non-romantic relationships, and how?
I think they do, and my philosophy is if you are in a primary relationship, that's where that needs to be number one, and that's controversial, and I think that needs to be number one, even if you have children. So, yes, definitely, you know, active listening is going to help you with anybody, especially somebody who you're finding it hard to understand or just open your, you know, your mind and be receptive to, because you've got so many answers and so many arguments and so many defenses. It's not easy. You have to say to yourself, okay, you know, the part of me that wants to say, yes, but has got to go outside and sit in the garden for half an hour, and I want to just be really here and listen to this person. That is a powerful tool in any situation where the other person is potentially going to press your buttons. I recommend it strongly. Another one which works really well, which comes from transaction analysis many years ago, is the victim-persecutor-rescuer triangle, which a lot of people know about. And that's based on the idea that in most relationships, so this could be at work, it could be, you know, with a friend, it could be with a child, it could be with a partner. In times of stress, we take on either the victim or the persecutor or the rescuer. So say I was feeling, you know, just not great today, and I felt like the world wasn't treating me very well, then I would already be in victim role, nothing to do with the other person. And I would potentially project onto my partner that they're persecuting me, and then expecting the relationship to rescue me. And we dance around this triangle a lot. And I would recommend that people sit down and work that triangle in any relationship. It's very powerful. And a really easy way of just saying, hey, hang on, we're in some kind of unhealthy.
That's actually very helpful, I think, in tying to taking responsibility and looking at what place am I standing in the nature of this relationship. Raj, do you have any insight on that?
Oh, my gosh. I'm so glad Colette mentioned that triangle. I call it the power triangle, and I use it all the time, you know, for clients to explain to them how that the persecutor, the victim, and the rescuer roles work. I look at it, I teach it in a little bit different way, in the sense that I talk more about it being like a power generator. For example, you know, we as human beings cannot be unplugged from feeling our power. And when we do start to go into the powerless mode, then we jump into this power triangle, which is like our little generator. And we start either persecuting, or we start rescuing, or we start playing victim in order to feel a sense of our power.
Yes, I agree. That's a great way of using the triangle. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, I interrupted you there. Please go on.
Oh, no, that's fine. That's about all I wanted to add. I thought we lost you again.
You did, and I'm back. What, I don't know what's going on with the phones this morning, but I do apologize.
That's okay. We don't need to spend any time on it. It's okay.
Can I just mention that another way of working with this triangle, and it is an incredibly useful tool for any relationship, is
is the listener supporter challenge model. So instead of doing any of the persecuting, rescuing, and being a victim, you listen, and you listen, and you listen, and you use active listening, and you really find out where the other person is. Then you support them. And finally, and I really mean finally, because sometimes, especially, you know, in a relationship, we kind of jump in and we challenge the person. We think we know their pattern they're running and what they need to change about themselves. But finally, a long way down the road, we might put in a very gentle challenge.
Oh, I love that, Colette.
Yeah. Otherwise, if you put the challenge in right at the beginning, you're going to be down this triangle again.
Yes.
What's an example of what the challenge would look like, Colette? What's a gentle challenge?
Oh, great question. Well, I suppose, and this could be the psychotherapist in me, so I apologize, but I suppose say I was in a situation with my husband and he was feeling criticized, let's say, which is not an uncommon dynamic in couples or even our relationship, definitely not. I might, after I've listened to him for a very long time and supported him, and support can mean changing my behavior, I might say to him, you know what, I wonder if, you know, sometimes when I'm saying something, it reminds you of a situation with your mother or your previous wife, or, you know, just... That is kind of a very psychotherapy kind of approach to it, but it might be just gently saying, you know, this happened before. I wonder if this has got to do with more than this situation right now between us, that it's something that's also possibly coming from within you, from within your history. And it would depend on the person, you know. Some people will say, actually, you're right, that's brilliant, thank you. And other people might get defensive. So I would really, that's why I say listen for a long time, support for a long time, and then eventually when you have a really good trust built up, then you can perhaps put in a challenge.
We just have a couple more moments. I want to ask you to highlight something you talked about just briefly earlier, Colette, and that is the role that compassion has and in the great work and the healing aspect of relationship.
Yeah, I see this with couples a lot. And I say to them, like, you know, the very fact that you are sitting in this room and you've chosen to come and you've chosen to get some help with this relationship shows how committed and how much this matters to you. And, you know, thank you for doing that. And perhaps you need to thank each other. And that really opens up compassion, that they're still there, they're still working at this, and a kind of understanding that it's not easy, and everybody's doing their best, and generally that's the case. You know, even if they're not in a couples therapy setting, even if they're just listening to this blog, for example, if you're listening to this blog, the chances are you want to make a change, therefore your heart's in it. And if your heart's in it, then you have compassion for yourself and the other person, and it's just a matter of tapping into that. And you know, do whatever you need to do. Go outside and shout at the trees, or take a long bath and calm down. Take care of yourself. And then when you've done that, you're going to have the resources to have compassion for yourself and the other person when things are difficult.
That's very true. So... there's a book that I love that I use as a resource all the time. It's called The Book of Awakening. It's by Mark Nepo, and in it there is a passage that he writes about responsibility that really ties in well to what you just said. And it's true inner responsibility centers on our willingness to give voice to whatever is happening to us in the midst of a relationship. This is important both for you and the person you are relating to. If you are not present, there is nothing to respond to. And love only becomes real in the world through our ability to respond. Bringing who you are to a relationship, being your true self, gives others the opportunity to transcend their limitations by acting on their love. It gives the other person a chance to show up. And it gives yourself a chance to show up. So... thank you, Colette, for joining us today. If you'd like to reach
Colette.
Colette,
thank you. You're welcome. It's been great.
So long. Have a fantastic and an amazing day.
Okay. Bye.
Bye-bye.